Jones. His latest book is Empire of Illusion, The End of Literacy and the Triumph of Spectacle. Chris, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.
I was reading some of your articles in Truthdig, and in your July 13th article, you wrote, "The commercial exploitation of Michael Jackson's death was orchestrated by the corporate forces that rendered Jackson insane." Do you see a connection between Michael Jackson's funeral and permanent war?
Yeah, I see. I mean, Jackson sort of illustrated in the extreme the disintegration of the self that is part of corporate culture, which turns everything and everyone into a commodity, which, of course, is what Jackson became for liquor producers.
Chris, we're having some trouble hearing. I guess you're on a cell phone. Can you move somewhere where we can maybe get a better signal?
Is this better?
Oh, that's much better.
Okay. Yeah, Jackson, you know, illustrated, I think, what happens when a human being is turned into a commodity, which is this dissolution of the self, creation which is endemic within the culture, where everything is about image, everything is about presentation. There's this kind of infantile fantasy with eternal youth, which of course he exemplified in the extreme. He pushed the boundaries. You saw it in terms of his multiple plastic surgeries, but 12 million Americans last year went in for cosmetic surgery. This is something that I think that he was an illustration of the kind of disease that has affected a society that is completely dominated by spectacle, by image.
Where does that come from? Why?
Well, it comes from the commercial culture, which of course has worked very hard to create it. I mean, we talk about American culture. American culture was destroyed. It was destroyed at the beginning of the 20th century by corporate forces and advertising that had to replace one ethic with another. It replaced the ethic of thrift, of self-sufficiency, of individualism, of integrity, with one of consumption, with the idea that individualism was somehow defined by brands, or by experiences that were sold to you. It was a complete upending of traditional American culture, so and a destruction of American culture. And the fascinating confluence of events that we face at the moment is that this corporate or consumer culture is collapsing with the economic meltdown, that the kind of mass-produced goods that were made accessible to the working class can no longer be afforded by a working class which is being foreclosed on their homes and pushed out of their jobs. And so it isn't just an economic meltdown or an economic crisis, but this is an existential crisis. And how that plays out, I don't know. It can go all sorts of ways. I mean, economic collapses, and I covered the economic collapse of Yugoslavia that led to the war, I mean, can be very frightening things. But there's something happening now that goes far beyond economic or political mismanagement by our power elite. There is a whole ethos that was imposed upon us through consumer culture and commodity culture that is no longer going to work.
Now, how does this tie into this permanent state of war that we seem to be in?
Well, and Seymour Melman, who taught at Columbia, has written, I think, the best stuff on this. And I think all of your listeners who are interested should go find his work. But he chronicled the kind of self-destructive quality of what he called the permanent war economy. Of course, half of all of our government spending since the end of World War II has been on defense. The deficit that we are incurring at the moment into the trillions of dollars, $1 trillion this year alone, is largely due to sustain empire, 671 military bases abroad. We are doing what all empires have done in the past throughout history, whether it's Roman or Ottoman or Austro-Hungarian. We are expanding beyond our capacities to sustain ourselves, that empires do. And what happens when you divert a disproportionate amount of your resources to the maintenance and sustenance of empire, which is, of course, is what happens, is happening to us now, is you literally destroy yourself from the inside out. We are hollowing ourselves from the inside out. You see it in terms of the collapse of basic social services, states going bankrupt, infrastructure, which is on the verge of complete breakdown, the collapse of public education, the fact that we are shedding hundreds of thousands of jobs a month, which even now the most optimistic economists will tell you are not coming back or certainly not coming back anytime soon. And there is a direct correlation from the imperial wars that are being waged in places like Afghanistan and Iraq, and the blight that has descended on working class neighborhoods. You know, the working class in this country, there's been a Weimarization of the American working class. It's completely decimated, and this is irrespective of Republicans or Democrats. It was a Democratic administration that gave us, under Bill Clinton, NAFTA, probably the single greatest betrayal of the working class in this country, coupled with so-called welfare reform. And, you know, we're now seeing for the first time how draconian that welfare reform that Clinton pushed through is, because starting this August, let's say the meltdown began roughly 2006, starting this August, we are going to see people who through unemployment insurance are able to get, you know, $500 a week, reduced to trying to live on $143 a month, which is what you get off of welfare.
Right.
We have been up until now effectively diverted by a culture of spectacle, by a consumer culture, by the focusing of our energies, our emotional and political life on this vast entertainment industry, the production of cheap, mass-produced goods, which, of course, as our currency declines in value, will become unaffordable, become inexpensive. All those sort of cheap products that are imported from China are one day soon not going to be cheap anymore.
So what you see is there's this hollowing out of people from the inside by this culture of consumerism, and that is now being reflected in this hollowing out in the larger sense, where we have a nation that is literally falling apart, being eaten away from the inside.
Yeah, that's how empires destroy themselves.
And
they neglect their domestic infrastructure and
to keep the wars going,
governing and social systems to such an extent that they collapse.
Right, but
you collapse from the inside out, and that's what we're doing.
If you were to walk down the street and you ask just about anyone what they think of war, they're going to say it's bad, it's horrible. Yet we keep funding these wars. Why does the money keep flowing into these weapon systems?
Because we are a corporate state where the interests of the citizens are irrelevant. You know, and you can see it in just about every major policy decision that is made by our elected officials. Take, for instance, the first round of the bailout, $700 billion. Constituent calls were 100-1 across the political spectrum against the bailout. Some of the most articulate and passionate speeches denouncing the government bailout of firms like AIG and Goldman Sachs were made by right-wing Republicans from Texas, and yet it passed anyway. Why did it pass? Because, of course, those corporate interests who have a stranglehold on the legislative process wanted it passed. That was true for the FISA Reform Act. The FISA Reform Act, which Barack Obama, by the way, voted for, came back from the campaign and voted for shortly before the election, was pushed through by the telecommunications companies. What did it do? Well, under the Bush administration, FISA was able to illegally wiretap and eavesdrop on tens of millions of Americans. We know that from whistleblowers, storing all of this information. There were 30 cases working their way up in the lower courts against the telecommunication companies for sharing this information with the government in direct contravention of our right to privacy, and they would have won. And so the FISA Reform Act retroactively made legal what was illegal and granted immunity to the telecommunications companies. It allows the process to continue. It's a giant step towards fascism. It's not something that had any popular support at all, but after spending $15 or $20 million in lobbying fees, maybe more, the telecommunications got what they wanted. I mean, you see it in the whole healthcare debate. Any debate must begin from the established fact that for-profit health is the problem. Right. That is what has created the problem, and all we have to do is compare the healthcare industry that we have to the healthcare industry in any other industrialized nation, whether it's Canada or France, it doesn't matter, Britain, anywhere else. We spend 2.5 or 3 times more for healthcare, and we have the worst service in the industrialized world. Why? Because we have hospitals and pharmaceuticals listed on the New York Stock Exchange, and their loyalty is to profits, not to providing adequate service, especially for people who have catastrophic illness, which is very expensive. So, but because the healthcare industry is such a powerful contributor to congressional campaigns, and a lot of this goes back to campaign finance, of course, even Obama won't even allow the question to be raised. I mean, you have 57%, I think, was the last poll of physicians who want basically Medicare for all, universal single-payer health care. A huge percentage of the American population wants it. But once again, it's an illustration of the fact that we live in a corporate that is not responsive to the needs or concerns or even the rights of its citizens. And what we have been undergoing slowly, for some time, but certainly accelerated under Reagan and continued under every administration since, is a kind of coup d'etat in slow motion. There's been a great political philosopher who taught at Berkeley and then later at Princeton, Sheldon Wolin, in his book, he lives just north of San Francisco, Democracy Incorporated talks about how he calls the system that we are barreling towards inverted totalitarianism, by which he means that it's not classical totalitarianism where you have a revolutionary movement who overthrows a system and creates a new system, but you retain the old system. But corporate forces behind that facade of democracy and patriotism and the Constitution essentially pervert the mechanisms or levers of power to such an extent that democracy, in fact, no longer functions. And I think that's right, we are increasingly living in a state of, it's his term, and I think it's a good one, inverted totalitarianism. Now, the problem is that as the situation disintegrates, as people, especially in the working class and in the middle class, are pushed to periods of real financial extremes, as they are no longer able to be seduced or mollified by the mass-produced goods of a consumer society, as these spectacles become hollower and hollower, what happens within the society? How does it react? My fear, of course, is that, the title of my book is Empire of Illusion, that we live anymore for a dream. Dreams are something that you drive towards, that you seek to attain. Illusions are something that you live in. And we live in an illusion that we're the greatest, freest country on earth, that we care for our citizens better than other countries. You saw it during the campaign. We were literally running offshore penal colonies where we torture other human beings, waging wars in Iraq and Afghanistan that under post-Nuremberg laws are defined as criminal wars of aggression. Preemptive wars are illegal under international law, and yet we championed ourselves as the protectors of freedom and liberty and democracy. And the problem with living in an illusion is that you remain, in essence, in a state of eternal childhood. You never grow up. You never face responsibly, I think, the stark new limitations that we are going to face.
Okay.
And the danger with that is that as the gap grows wider and wider between the illusion that you have and the reality you experience, you're emotionally, psychologically, and intellectually unprepared for the shock that you confront, the shock that we're all going to face.
You're listening to...
We're not going to be able to borrow our way out of this crisis back to a bubble economy. It isn't going to work.
Okay, let me just
hold off the decline for 3-4, you know, a few months, but eventually the bottom's going to fall out.
Okay, let me just jump in here real quick and let our listeners know you're listening to KBOO in Portland. I'm Marianne Barisonic, and my guest is Chris Hedges. We're talking about his book, Empire of Illusion, The End of Literacy and the Triumph of Spectacle. But don't you think that there is a certain need for illusion and spectacle? Isn't this the sort of ritual that gives a cohesive identity to a society?
Not illusion and spectacle, no. Let me give you an example. Across, sort of various ideologies, there is this belief, and this is an illusion, that if we can just dig deep enough within ourselves and find the inner fortitude and strength, we can have everything that we want. Reality is never an impediment to what we desire. This is, at its core, what is peddled on Oprah. It is what is peddled by the Christian right. It is what is peddled by self-help gurus like Tony Robbins and others. It is what is peddled by corporatism.
It's also what's peddled by the New Age movement.
And the problem is that eventually that illusion, and well, not that eventually, I think we're at the moment, when that illusion collapses. And I think that essentially what it does is render you completely ineffectual in a time of momentous change. And you tend to seek out, you know, demagogues and charlatans and people who promise moral renewal and revenge for the wrongs that you have suffered. It is a way to keep people from growing up. So I think illusion is very, very dangerous. And spectacle, investing your emotional life in spectacle, poisons your civic and political discourse. We turn on any commercial news program and you'll see what I mean. It's endless, celebrity meltdowns and trivia and gossip. Cicero wrote about all this at the end of the Roman Empire when he talked about the role of the arena in Roman society, which became in many ways a post-literate society. And what happened to Cicero will eventually, Mark Antony beheaded him and cut off his hands and carried his head and his hands to the arena, and the crowd roared their approval, and Mark Antony said, you know, he will never speak or write again. And that was the end of Rome. And I think that, historical analogies are always dangerous because they're different. I mean, it was a slave-based economy in Rome, and et cetera. But nevertheless, historical memory is important because we are not the first empire to degenerate and decay. And I think that we can learn a lot from looking at other empires that went through the experience that we're going through now.
So do you see any way out of this?
No. We're dying. The question is how we will die. We have unfortunately been governed by a power elite which is proven utterly self-centered and corrupt. If you doubt me, pick up the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times or any other paper and take a look at all of these CEOs who are walking away with these gigantic packages, compensation packages, even though, of course, they're being bailed out by taxpayer funds, Goldman Sachs being the perfect example which just announced that it turned a profit. And so you have a very myopic and self-centered oligarchy, which is sustaining a corporate system, which is destroying the country. And, you know, Carl Pugliani in 1944 wrote this brilliant book called The Great Transformation, in which he talked about how unfettered capitalism, which is essentially, we used to live under a system of managed capitalism. That was systematically destroyed by corporate forces. Larry Summers, a large contributor to that, by dismantling Glass-Steagall, which separated investment from commercial banks. Would have, if he had not destroyed Glass-Steagall, we would not have a banking crisis. Canada doesn't have a banking crisis because commercial investment banks can't all become hedge funds, as our banks were allowed to. And he wrote about how he actually used the word sacred. He said, when you have a society that no longer has the capacity to understand that human beings, natural environment, have an intrinsic value beyond their monetary value, then built into unfettered capitalism is a self-destructive quality because it exhausts everything for its potential for profit until it destroys it. And that, of course, is what has happened to our manufacturing base. They've shipped it overseas. You had prison labor in China that was assembling this stuff for a fraction of what it was to be assembled here for and then shipped back. Unfortunately, as you destroyed your manufacturing base, in order to buy this stuff and sustain this lifestyle, people had to be given massive amounts of credit. I think credit card debt in this country is about $17 billion. I can't remember. It's very high. And that's the next crisis that's going to hit us. And so we allowed unfettered capitalism to essentially dominate or eventually control our government, we ended up with a system, as Pugliani pointed out, of inevitable self-destruction. These corporations and large industries are destroying the very ecosystem that sustains the human species at an alarming rate. Going back to the Michael Jackson, this kind of investing our emotional life in spectacle is a wonderful way, and let's not forget that all of these spectacles are run for profit. I mean, these are profit-driven enterprises here, and they know very well what they're doing, and they know very well how to manipulate our emotional response. But it's a way to keep us from seeing. And so we have several crises that are emergent. First of all, an economic crisis. Second of all, an environmental crisis. And I think finally, a political crisis, because however well-meaning Barack Obama may be, he has proven utterly ineffectual in any way altering the military, industrial complex, and the corporate forces that determine exactly how the direction our country goes in and how our resources are being used. I mean, what we are seeing now is the largest transference of wealth upwards in American history, the virtual inverse of the New Deal. And what I worry is that by the time, and it isn't going to work, and there's, again, no shortage of economists who've made that very clear, and by the time things really collapse, we're not going to have the resources in which to respond. So what we are doing by shipping off billions and billions of dollars to large corporations and banks is sustaining essentially a criminal financial structure. Most of these people, especially the people like AIG, I mean, these people should all be in jail, and depleting the resources by which we will be able to ameliorate the widespread suffering that will be left in its wake.
So do you have any advice for people who are looking at ways to either make this a little bit less awful than it sounds like it's going to happen? Or what are you, like, personally doing? I mean, you're predicting this kind of wholesale social meltdown.
Well, I think that's where we're headed. I mean, you know, the only reason we're above water is because China and other countries are still buying our debt. But there's clear movement by China away from that. They are rapidly trying to unload their dollars. That was what this whole, it fell through, but this whole Rio Tinto iron mine deal in Australia was about, where the Chinese were willing to pay $20 billion. You know, it's just unloading dollars for physical assets that, you know, if the dollar collapses, because once they stop buying the debt, and if, once the dollar is no longer the reserve currency, then the dollar, you know, can become junk.
So what does that mean?
And again, you know, this is not a new cycle. It's what happened to the British pound after the sterling was no longer the reserve currency.
But what do you think this means to people on a day-to-day basis?
On a day-to-day basis, everyone should get out of debt as fast as possible. Don't buy anything new, as if you can help it. You know, it's a matter of trying to break the machine. You know, you see fringe groups, Oath Keepers and militias. I mean, you know, there's a kind of very frightening, restive right-wing violence. And when you listen to the rhetoric of these people, their analysis of the corporate state is largely correct. Unfortunately, they have fallen into this very frightening fantasy that violence is somehow the solution. Violence, of course, is just what the corporate forces want, because it justifies further repression. George Orwell said that all totalitarian movements rule through fraud and force.
Okay.
Well, we've already seen the fraud, and I have no doubt that these forces will, in order to retain power, use whatever force is necessary.
And now,
I'm certainly for nonviolence. I think, though, that we begin to have to look at the corporate state as one that has completely corrupted and destroyed our two-party system. I didn't vote for Obama. I voted for Nader for this reason. I think we on the left have to begin a new militancy and stop investing our hopes in the Democratic Party.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. We're running out of time here, you're going to be at Powell's on Burnside, 7:30 on July 21st. And I've been speaking with Chris Hedges about his latest book, Empire of Illusion, The End of Literature and the Triumph of Spectacle. Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to being there.